Welcome to Coffee Table Mythos. I'm Eliza.
And I'm Leah.
For our new listeners, where can they find us?
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, coffeetablemythos@gmail.com, anchor.fm, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. How can they support us?
By liking, following, sharing, subscribing, and reviewing our podcast. Reviewing our podcast helps others find us so that our family can grow. Also, let us know if you have any coffee or caffeinated beverage suggestions, especially small businesses that ship. Come interact with us.
You can use our hashtag CoffeeTableMythos to show us your cool art of the entities we cover. Email us to let us know what you want to hear about, or message us on Instagram or Facebook. What about merch?
For now, visit us on Teespring at teespring.com/store/coffee-table-mythos for shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Leah is testing out prototypes so that we can make our own merch soon. You can also donate to us at anchor.fm/coffee-table-mythos/support. All donations will go to making this podcast better.
And with that,
grab your favorite beverage and let's talk myths. So what you drinking today?
I am drinking a Starbucks mocha iced latte with raspberry syrup because they finally got the raspberry syrup back.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yes. And what are you drinking?
Well, right now I'm drinking an Alani Nu Cosmic Stardust, but prior to that...
That's the purple flavored one.
Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I had a venti pumpkin spice cold foam cold brew with caramel sauce and caramel flavoring added to it because it was a no bones day and we had to use some bones.
We did, unfortunately.
So you could tell the people behind the counter were concerned by the way I ordered my drink because they were feverishly saying, "Who's this person? Is this person here yet?" And then I was like, "Are you guys talking about me?" They're like, "She's here! Are you okay?" All right.
Yeah, I'm fine.
I'm fine. I'm fine, everybody. I also have a water, so people don't think I'm just drinking straight caffeine all the time.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what they think we do, but that's fine.
That's true.
It's our brand.
Yeah. Your mama wasn't feeling good.
No, so we did her grocery shopping for her.
Yeah. So that's why we had to use our bones on a No Bones Day. And if you're wondering what No Bones Day means, you're not on TikTok. At least not on the TikTok that we're on.
And that's fine.
That's fine. That's totally okay.
So what are you talking about today?
I'm actually talking about two different yokai.
Okay.
Because they're related.
Okay.
Because they interact with each other. So the first one that I'm going to talk about is the Okuri Inu, which literally means escorting dog.
I was going to say, it's a dog.
Yep, it's a dog.
It's a doggo. Is it a good doggo?
Depends. Good boy. Depends on the situation. So, stories of the Okuri Oni, or Okuri Inu, because there's different versions of the name.
Oh yeah, mine too.
Yep. So the Okuri Oni come from the Tohoku region to Kyushu, and depending on the area, it is either a wolf or a dog with numerous different behaviors.
Okay.
Also sometimes referred to as Yama Inu, aka Mountain wild dog, or wolf, or the Okami.
Okami!
Yep. Generally, they follow people walking along the mountain paths at night. And if the person falls over, gets hurt, or shows weakness, they are immediately gobbled up.
Okay.
I used gobble because I think that sounds kind of cooler than eaten.
That's fair.
If the person just takes a short rest, they won't attack. So if, like, the person's just like, "Oh no, this is so exhausting." Like, I read a few different articles where it said that people could trick the yokai into thinking that they weren't actually hurt or anything by saying stuff like, "Oh wow, I'm just really tired right now. Give me one second.
Yeah, I'm just gonna take a breather and then I'm gonna get back up."
Yeah, exactly. So if it was just like a short rest, they wouldn't attack them. It was very important to not look too tired. And depending on the region the story's coming from varies the behavior.
I guess it's a good thing that there wasn't one following us when you twisted your ankle in the woods.
Well, it depends on which version we were talking about, because that's where we're going to kind of go into that a little bit. In some regions, it is said the Okuri Inu will charge into a person, and if you fall, a pack of dogs will appear and attack. There are also tales, depending on the region, about what happens when you make it safely to the end of the mountain path. For example, one states that when you make it to the end, to say something such as goodbye or thank you for escorting me, to have the Okuri Inu stop following you. Another states that upon returning home, you should first wash your feet, give thanks for a safe journey, and then offer the Okuri Inu some sort of gift to have it go and leave you alone and not, like, stay.
Mm-hmm.
In Koyama Masoa's Collection of Folk Stories from Chisagata District, published in early Showa period, which I found out is 1926 to 1989, so it's relatively recent,
mm-hmm.
contains accounts of the Okuri... I say recent, and I'm like 30 years old. And that was prior to that time. I cannot. So...
It contains what?
It contains accounts of the Okuri Inu. And in one, a woman from today's Ueda, which was then Shioda, left her husband at home while she went to her parents to give birth to her child. While on a mountain path, she went into labor and gave birth right then and there. And as night fell, many Okuri Inu gathered around the mother and newborn.
Oh no.
The mother yelled at them while terrified, "If you're going to eat us, then just eat us." But instead of attacking, they protected her and the child from lurking wolves in the mountain.
Aww.
So once she was reunited with her husband, they gave the Okuri Inu red rice, which was reserved for auspicious occasions. This book also states that in Kumi...
I would have named the baby after something wolf.
I know, right? Kumi or Yamaiha are either classified as Okuri Inu, which are protectors of people, or Mukei Uni, which attack people. So there's two different versions. From the Kanto region to Kinki region... And Kochi Prefecture.
wait, what? There's a region called the Kinki region.
It's Kinki.
I mean, that would be pronounced Kinki.
Sorry. And I'm sure it's not what it means in Japanese.
Of course not.
You're bad. But this is our show, so hey. Hey. Anyway, so there are legends of the Okuri Okami, which means sending off wolf, and they are like the Okuri Inu, except they are feared as yokai that stalk people and eat them if they fall over. However, they are said to protect people from danger if treated correctly. It is also said that they will flee at the smell of burning fuse, so it was recommended that those traveling bring one.
The real reason my mom always has dog treats to keep herself safe on her walks.
Right. Also, it is said to casually smoke tobacco or speaking to the Okuri Okami would cause it to escort you home without attacking. Giving it its favorite food or a single sandal as thanks was also said to satisfy the Okuri Okami and it would leave. It is said that the Japanese wolf had a trait of following humans to monitor them, and it is a hypothesis that the Okuri Okami is in fact a Japanese wolf. There is a Japanese expression, Okuri Okami, which refers to people who gain a person's goodwill while harboring bad intentions, or, for example, a man following a woman, lavishing her with goods with really bad intentions. That saying originates from these legends. These yokai are known for having a relationship with another yokai called the Yosuzume, which literally means night sparrow.
Sparrow!
Yes. They appear at night and chirps, chi-chi-chi. Like a sparrow. To hear the song was a warning to take extra care to watch your footing on the mountain path, for Okuri Inu are near. In Tomiyama and Tonokuchi, it was a bad luck to be possessed by the Yosuzumi. One way to get rid of them was to chant an incantation that in English means, "Do birds that cry chi 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 yearn for a shinagi rod? And if they do, then let them be struck with a single pan." Or another chant, "Birds that say chi chi chi, please blow quickly, divine wind of Ise." To carelessly catch one, or catch a Yosuzumi, would result in one becoming afflicted with nyctalopia, which means night blindness.
So what is that? Is that where you can't see because it's got dark all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Okay.
However, in other prefectures, for example, Wakayama, it was considered proof that a wolf was providing you with protection from monsters of the mountain.
So,
in some cases, to see the night sparrow was good, and in others it was bad.
Okay. And it could apparently also possess you.
Correct.
Does it work with the wolf, or is it warning you that the wolf is there?
It's warning you the wolf is there.
So they're not friends?
It doesn't say.
Okay.
And it also depends on the situation. There's more that I'm going to get into. In Kitagawa, Aki District, they are actually a black butterfly that would cause a person to walk noisily. In Ehime, they are a moth travelers experience before the appearance of a mountain dog, and they would fly around the traveler in a way to keep the traveler from moving forward, so it was basically like surrounding them. In Higashitsuno and Kubukawa, now Shimanto, of Takaoka District, Aichi Prefecture, they were also known as mountain-based sparrows, often encountered prior to the appearance of a mountain dog and wolves. However, even if you're in a group of people encountering the Yosuzume, only one person can hear this yokai, and for a mountain-based sparrow to show up was seen as bad luck.
I wonder if this is based on the relationships between real birds and wolves, how, like, I don't remember if it's crows or ravens, but they follow wolves because they know they'll get food if a wolf attacks something.
Oh, that's a good thought. So, after reading about the Okuri Inu, I decided to look a little into the Japanese wolf, also known as the Honshu wolf, which is an extinct subspecies of the gray wolf. The last known Japanese wolf was killed in 1905 in Honshu. However, there have been claimed sightings of dog-looking beasts proposed to be Japanese wolves until 1997. There's also one from 2000, but most of those have been debunked. None of the claims were verified, and many zoologists believe that these claims are misidentifications of feral dogs.
Okay.
713 AD was when the first known wolf was recorded in Japan. And in 1701, a lord introduced the first wolf bounty since they liked to prey on horses and livestock. In 1742 was the existence of the first professional wolf hunters using firearms and poison against the wolves.
Oh my goodness.
In 1736, rabies appeared in dogs of eastern Japan, which was possibly introduced from China or Korea. And this spread like wildfire, eventually spreading to wolves, which led them not only attacking or killing horses, but also humans, which led to organized wolf hunts. Under the Meiji Restoration, killing wolves became a national policy, and within one generation, the Japanese wolf was extinct.
Wow.
Yes. There are estimated 20 Shinto wolf shrines, where Okami is regarded as the messenger of the kami, spirits, and offers protection against wild boar and deer going after crops. Mountains of Japan were highly associated with wolves, believed to be their protector or guardian, which I just got real strong Princess Mononoke vibes. Many mountain villages, for example, Okami Iwa, which means wolf rock, and Okami Taira, which means wolf plateau, are named after the wolf. The most famous national shrine of the wolf is located at Mitsume in Chichibu, Saitama Prefecture, with a number of smaller wolf shrines on the Kii Peninsula. Some villages had wolf charms called shishiyoki that were believed to protect their village and crops against wild boar, and I keep thinking of wolf children with the wild boar incidents. Because, like, the farmers would be like, "Oh, that darn wild boar came into our crops again!" Wolf fangs, hide, and hair were carried by travelers to ward off evil spirits, and wolf skulls were kept in some home shrines to ward off misfortune. In Gifu Prefecture, some villages use the wolf skull as a charm for both protection as well as curing possessed villagers. And that is all the things wolf.
That's crazy that they have so many shrine-related and, like, holy-type things having to do with the wolf when there were such intense wolf hunts that they went extinct. Like, yeah. I know that occasionally here in the U.S., well, in certain parts of the U.S., when the populations get too big and they start attacking, like, humans, they cull down the numbers. Mm-hmm. But they never completely make them extinct, I don't believe.
No. Like, and there's
sanctuaries and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when I was little, I used to have a picture book on gray wolves. And it was, like, something for, like, they were on the endangered species list, I think, back in the 90s. Because that's when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it so much. I thought wolves were so cool.
You still think wolves are really cool.
I do still think wolves are really cool. But I read this at first. I found this, and then I found, like, the night sparrow, and I was like, oh.
It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. So I really enjoyed looking into this. I feel sad for all the Japanese wolves that are now dead. But it's just crazy that they have, like, all these things surrounding the wolves. And I also read something about how it probably wasn't just the rabies, but also deforestation that kind of attributed to their habitats being destroyed.
And them attacking, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's definitely a huge topic that's used by Miyazaki in the Ghibli films. Mm-hmm. And this is just one of those examples where, like, yeah, that makes sense, you know?
It does.
Anyway, so that's the Okuri Inu and the Yosuzume.
Nice. And with that, we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And we're back. So what are you telling us today, Leah?
This week, I'll be telling you about the phenomena that is the Yashiki Warashi. And that's spelled Z-A-S-H-I-K-I space W-A-R-A-S-H-I.
Huh.
They are yokai that usually come in the shape of children, both boys and girls, and usually appear ages 5 to 6, but they can go as high as 15 or as low as 3. The girls usually wear kimono, and the boys usually wear patterned warrior costumes.
Hmm.
They both tend to have short, cut hair, though occasionally the girls will have long hair that's pulled back.
Hmm.
Their faces are generally red or blushing, but only children and the homeowner can see these beings.
Interesting.
Mostly, they're seen as vague child shapes and are noticed because of their tendency towards mischief.
And mayhem.
And mayhem. A sign that your home has a Yashiki Warashi is footprints in ashes or soap powder.
Why are there ashes around my house?
Like from a fireplace?
Oh, that makes sense. My bad.
Which is kind of cute, but also kind of terrifying if you don't know what's causing it, right?
Right, you'd be like, what the fuck? Why is there a small person hiding in my walls?
Yeah. They also cause phantom noises like the sounds made from kids' games, such as spinning tops that don't stop, and children's voices, or even Kagura music.
No thank you. That's creepy.
But this isn't to say they're bad yokai. In fact, they're considered lucky as long as they aren't hurt or run off. Most commonly, they are found one yokai per haunted home, but there are some times when there are a few in the same house. This image of, like, two little kids in festival dress holding hands with blunt cut black hair is, like, tickling my brain, and I can't place what anime it's from, but this is reminding me of them. So, the name Yashiki Warashi means sitting room child. A yashiki is a formal sitting room whose floors are covered in tatami mats. And it's in these rooms that the yokai like to frequent. A house that is haunted by a Yashiki Warashi is said to have good fortune and riches, while a household that scares off its yokai will fall into ruin.
Oh.
According to yokai.com, in one account, a family witnessed a Yashiki Warashi leaving their home, and soon they all succumbed to food poisoning and died.
Oh my gosh!
In another well-known legend from Iwate Prefecture, a wealthy man's son shot a Yashiki Warashi with a bow and arrow. Soon after, the family's fortune collapsed.
That's not good.
The lore of the Yashiki Warashi is most common in the Iwate Prefecture of Japan. This is towards the northeastern side of the main island, not including Hokkaido. Here's your plant facts for the episode. The prefecture's flower is from the Polonia tree. This is one of the plant facts that Eliza will remember. What's the Polonia tree's common name?
The princess tree.
Yep. The Polonia tree is called the princess tree for multiple reasons. The first, and intentionally, is because it's named after Tsar Paul's daughter, Anna Polona. But the second, unintentional reason, is that the trees were used to make chests, which were sometimes filled with a daughter's dowry. The wood is super lightweight and doesn't warp, and it grows very fast. It can grow back from its root system, which got it the nickname, the Phoenix Tree.
Hmm.
It has these really cool giant purple cones of flowers, and it's one of the trees that has escaped cultivation.
Aw, shit.
Which I love when that, like, it's not a good thing. I'm going to preface that. It's generally not a good thing because it's basically makes itself an invasive species. But it's just a funny statement to me. Like, this tree escaped cultivation because it sounds like, oh, I just took up my roots and I walked outside the fence.
I just imagine, like, a plant going, can't touch me.
But, like, the one that happened kind of around where we are is the Bradford pear.
Oh, yeah.
It is all over the, like, edges of the highways down here because it escaped cultivation. Because when they made it, they were like, well, first off, they thought they made the perfect tree. And then, like, 20 years later, they turned out to be really weak and, like, will just come down on top of power lines and shit. But anyway, I don't want to rant about that because I have a whole rant.
She does.
But that Eliza has heard many times.
Is there one in front of our house?
There is. Unfortunately. Yeah, every time there's a really bad storm, I'm like, I pray that the tree stays up.
Like, please don't go down right now.
But the way it escaped cultivation was they were like, oh, it's the perfect tree because it won't cause baby trees to be made because Bradford pear to Bradford pear don't make babies. But it can make baby trees with other, like, pears and other things in that family. So now it escaped cultivation because it got fertilized by similar family trees. And, I mean, they look really pretty along the sides of the road where they're little and, like, not causing problems when they're in bloom. But, like, one day, they're gonna be big and they're gonna fall down during big storms.
And it's gonna cause problems.
And it's gonna cause problems. So, one of the crazy things about the princess tree is that because they were so lightweight and sought after, sometimes people would wait until a family went on vacation and cut them down and stole the tree in the middle of the night. Because it was so lightweight, a couple men could just walk off with it between them. Then they would make money selling it to a woodworker.
I remember you telling me this.
So, I don't think I've told you this.
Hmm.
Its wood is resistant to rot, so it can be used to make boats and surfboards.
What?
So after the plant bunny hole, we're going to go back on track.
Okay, I was like, oh damn, this whole episode just got commandeered by plants. Which is okay, because you're very passionate.
So there are tales of the Yashikiwarashi keeping guests awake at night by playing with their pillows and futons. Other times, they'll play with the household's children. Or, in the case of elderly owners or infertile owners, they may just keep them company.
Oh, that's sad. I mean, cute.
Yeah, like sweet.
It's like
bittersweet.
It's bittersweet, you know.
There is a superstition that if you bury a golden ball underneath the floor of a home as it's being built, you can lure a Yashikiwarashi to the house. Some consider them commies, but others believe that this is a relatively new addition with its association with Buddhism. Some customs to keep your Yashikiwarashi happy are to leave food for it or decorate a room specifically with snacks and toys a child would like to play with, and this would keep them happy. Content warning. We will shortly be discussing filicide.
Oh.
If that is too heavy for you right now, we'll see you next time.
Wait a second. Is that going to be the rest of this episode?
It's like a chunk. It's maybe like a minute or so.
I'm going to emotionally prepare myself for this.
And then it goes back to normal stuff. As always, take care while listening. While this may be an easy way to explain to children about the changes in fortune of their neighbors, it's possible it came from darker roots. There was a time when some families faced hardships and had too many mouths to feed. A hard solution some families found themselves using was having to kill some of their children so that the rest could have enough food to survive. Many times, these children were buried under the dirt floor of the kitchen instead of in formal graves, and it is possible that this led to the stories of the Yashikiwarashi.
I'm not okay.
I'm sorry.
I tried to be, like, ready, but I wasn't.
Yeah.
I was still not ready.
I know. I think that's all.
Okay.
Okay. Another belief is that they aren't children's ghosts or commies, but rather kappa in disguise, as kappa are infamous for their pranks.
Well, that's true.
And can shapeshift.
That is also true.
Now, one of the names that kept coming up was one Mr. Kunio Yanagita, that was alive from 1875 to 1962, who wrote Tono Monogatari, which is folklore gathered in the Iwate Prefecture and has a bunch of stories about the Yashikiwarashi. Both stories earlier, about the food poisoning and the bow and arrow were originally from the Tono Monogatari. So I went looking into him briefly and found a couple of cool things. First, he is considered the father of modern Japanese folklore studies, because though he started off as a bureaucrat, he fell in love with rural Japan and its stories, switched careers, and eventually established Munzuku Gaku as a studyable field. What's crazy is I don't remember seeing his name before in any of the creatures we've talked about, mm-hmm. or at least that I've talked about. Mm-hmm. And you would think I would have, since he's the father of folklore studies. The other cool thing, which maybe is only notable because we're Americans and this isn't a common practice here yet, is that he took his wife's family name when they got married. So I went looking into that, and apparently it's more along the lines of the wife's family formally adopting the husband into the family than just taking the last name. And it happens most often when the wife's family has a business that the husband is eventually going to be running. So they adopt the husband into the family in a situation similar to when a child is adopted.
That's crazy.
Today, they can be found in a bunch of anime and manga, such as XXXHolic, Yokai Watch, The House Spirit Tatami-chan, Yuna and the Haunted Hot Springs, Hozuki's Cool-Headedness, Rosario and Vampire, etc. That was like a minor character.
Yeah.
There are representations in so many animes, I was not listing all of them. But none of them are the picture I have in my head of the two kids holding hands. So I'm guessing that whatever they are, they're just children that are traditionally dressed and not actually Yashiki Warashi spirits. And that is the lowdown on the house spirits known as the Yashiki Warashi.
It's pretty freaking cool.
Except for the sad part.
Except for the sad part that's like bringing back some bad memories from the academy.
Okay. Yeah. So, yep. Nope. I got it.
Yeah.
You're good. So, I guess I should probably be the first one to go for Brighten the Mood since I've ruined it.
I mean, you didn't ruin the mood. I was talking about the extinction of the Japanese wolf, so that's also kind of sad.
Well, do you want to go first?
No, you go first.
Well, then ask me.
What's something to brighten the mood?
I got a lot of Christmas/Yule shopping done.
Truth.
Super early, and a bunch more presents that were being made done as well. So hopefully I won't be super stressed out closer to the holidays. Eliza, tell me something to brighten the mood.
This week I got my belated birthday present from my sister.
Yeah.
Which is a Hercules Pegasus backpack from Box Lunch. We're not sponsored by them. And I know, like, I'm wondering, okay, where the heck am I going to use this? And I know eventually, hopefully, I'm praying that one day we'll be comfortable enough to either go to a Renaissance fair or a theme park or something of that nature, and I'll be able to take it with me there. Another thing I got this week was my grandmother. She does these really cool carvings of Santas, and apparently she has started doing this thing where for each one of the grandkids, she's been making these wood carvings of Santas for each one each year. So I'm the third grandchild, so I am the third in line, and I didn't find out until she was literally painting mine, where she was like, what color did you want it, red or blue? And I'm like, oh. So I got a blue one, and I'm very, very excited about it. It looks really, really cool. I just remember being a kid thinking that, like, these Santas look so cool, and I didn't know my grandmother was the one that was actually making them.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have my own, and I'm really excited about it, so. Oh, and also we got a lavender plant today, and we've called him Patrick.
Yeah. Patrick needed some love and care when we got home, so he has been taken out of his pot, his roots have been fixed, he's been put back in the pot. He's soaking his roots right now because the dirt was so dry that I was just pouring water into this pot and it was not coming out the bottom. And then he got a little trimmed, get all the dead bits off, and he's already looking so much better.
Sweet baby Patrick.
All right. So that wraps up week 64. And she's laughing because when I tried to say 64 earlier, my brain scrambled and I said 42.
Yeah, I was like, 42? Wait a second.
Because I'm apparently in a time warp back 20-some episodes. So, yes, happy week 64.
And we're heading toward Halloween at this point. So please, as you're getting toward that holiday season, take care of yourselves, be safe, have fun, and celebrate accordingly.
All right. This is Coffee Table Mythos.
We'll catch you next time.